nothing but ravaged land. On the other, the dying forests of Avalon. There was so little left, and much of what remained was gray and withered.
All the gray you see is a scourge, Tangnost said. It's a result of so many of Avalon's trees and inhabitants being killed. There's no longer enough magic to support the wilds and more delicate creatures, so the wilderness is dying, essentially starving to death for want of magic. Once the forests are gone, where will we live?
And that's what this all comes down to, Nick thought. They want us to fight their war. Somehow seeing the fires made it all too real. Kids fighting and dying. Nick shuddered. He tried to imagine what that would be like. Tried to imagine himself being handed a sword and actually fighting a man to the death. There was no way he could ever do such a thing. Just no way. Just what have I got myself into? And how am I going to get out of this? Hey, Danny said. Why don't we get some guns? A few AK-47s ought to do the trick. There were plenty of nods. What's an AK-47? Peter asked. You know, Danny replied. An automatic rifle. A machine gun. Oh, I've brought back guns over the decades, Peter said. But they don't work after going through the mist. The powder gets messed up or something. Flashlights and radios don't want to work either. Even brought over a Game Boy. I really wanted one of those. But nothing electrical works here. I don't know why. But I think the mist gets to them, mucks them up. What? Game Boys don't work here! Danny's shoulders slumped. Aw, man, no way! That just sucks. Nick scanned the length of the island. Where are we exactly? Nick asked, shaking his head. I mean, this island. There's no way it can fit in New York Harbor. And even if it could, don't you think someone would notice a big fluffy cloud drifting about? Peter made a face like such a thought had never even crossed his mind, and looked to Tangnost.
I've often wondered the same, Tangnost said. Many of us have. I know before the mist returned, we could see the surrounding lands. The natives used to come to us on canoes so they could see us too. Maybe the mist does more than hide us. Maybe it takes us into a different time and place. This would explain why time moves so much slower here. But this is merely a guess. I certainly can't begin to understand the ways of Avalok.
Then another thought struck Nick. Wait, he said. The lady controls the mist, right?
Sure, Tangnos said. She's a water goddess. She's one with all the bodies of water.
Then why doesn't she lift the mist? Peter looked horrified. Lift the mist? Then more men would come. Why would she ever want to do that for? So the flesh eaters can leave. And, Nick thought, so I can go home. Leave? Peter gasped, looking at Nick as though his head was screwed on backward. The flesh eaters aren't gonna leave. We could send them golden swans to carry them home and they'd only slaughter and eat them. Murder is all they know. They're monsters. Yes, Nick said. But if they're killing Avalon, isn't it worth the chance?
Maybe early on, Tangnost put in. Perhaps then that might have worked, before the magic twisted them, before the new world became so populated. Maybe if the lady had not been so consumed by grief, she'd have done things differently. Maybe not, for the lady is not all-knowing. Far from it. She sees the world in ancient terms, a creature ruled by sentiment and emotions. Regardless, it is too late now. The only way out is to destroy them before they destroy us. Can you see that, Nick?
Nick nodded, but he wasn't sure. Wasn't sure about a lot of things on this island.
Enough talk,
Peter said, and his eyes flashed. It's time to turn you three into killers. Peter, Nick said, I need to talk to you.
Not now, Peter replied. We've much to do.
Nick grabbed Peter's arm. No, it has to be now. Peter looked at the hand holding him, then into Nick's eyes. He could see it. The darkness.
Careful, Nick.
Nick let go. Peter, please. Peter caught the hard look from Sikiyu. He winked at her, then hung back with Nick as she and the others headed down the stairs.
Peter, I need to get back.
Peter stared at him absently.
Back home, Nick said. Home?
Peter's nose wrinkled up.
You mean back to the human world?
My mother needs me.
You're just homesick. That happens. Look, there's a lot around here that takes getting used to, but...
No, it's not that. I have to get back to my mother. Have to. She's in danger. There are a couple of bad men living in the house with her. I told you about them. Marco, remember?
The drug dealer, I remember. I thought you said that was all your mother's mess.
Doesn't matter. What matters is she's in trouble. And if I don't get back there, well, they're going to hurt her. Maybe already have. Peter could hear the strain in Nick's voice, could see the growing agitation in his eyes, caught the boy clenching and unclenching his fists. If anything happens to her, I don't know what I'll do. I have to get back, okay? Okay?
He's on the edge, Peter thought. Need to be careful. Maybe Sikiyu's right. Maybe it would be best to kill the boy before it went too far. Okay, Nick, Peter said calmly. We can work something out.
Nick's face flooded with relief. Really? Good, good. When can we go?
Day after tomorrow.
Nick narrowed his eyes at him.
You have to do me a favor first, Peter said. You help me, then I help you. How does that sound?
You want me to fight?
No, you don't have to fight. I'd never ask that of new blood. But I need you there. Need you to help in other ways.
Nick stared at him. This isn't one of your games, one of your tricks. Peter acted wounded.
Nick, of course not.
I want you to swear. Swear on the lady's life that if I stand with you, you'll help me get back through the mist.
I swear, Peter said,
knowing very well the odds were against either one of them ever seeing the human world again.
Heck, I'll go one better. I swear I'll come home with you and help you take care of Marco.
Nick searched Peter's face, clearly seeking any sign of deceit. Peter now saw the resolve and determination, the same qualities that brought this boy through the mist.
There's deep strength in this boy, Peter thought. If anyone can beat the darkness, it'll be him.
You would do that? Nick asked. Come back with me?
Only if you promise I get to be the one who slits their throats, Peter said.
A grim smile snuck across Nick's face. Peter spat into the palm of his hand and stuck it out to Nick.
Deal?
Nick spat in his own hand, and they shook. Deal. Nick, Danny, Cricket, and Leroy gathered around Peter in the chamber. Peter hefted his short sword and twirled it from one hand to another.
Flesh eaters are made of hard stuff, he said, his voice dropping down low. The magic has twisted them, perverted them, turned them into monsters, into demons. Their skin has turned into thick, scaly hides, hard to cut or penetrate. Their vitals have shriveled within their bodies, hard to find.
He clutched his stomach.
I've seen them take a stab in the gut and keep on coming. They're strong, too. If they catch hold of you, they can rip your innards right out of your bugle hole. Sound scary? It shouldn't. Because fighting is about being fast and clever, and they're neither. The faster fighter will always beat the brute. So all you have to do is learn the right tactics, keep on your toes, and you will take the day. Shall we get started?
The kids looked at each other, unsure.
Good, Peter said. Then line up.
Leroy, Nick, Cricket, and Danny all lined up.
We're not asking you to fight tomorrow. We need your help in other ways.
There were several audible exhalations of relief.
But war is unpredictable, so we're going to show you some basic tricks in case you find yourself in a bad spot.
Sakiyu and Redbone handed each of them a short sword.
In times past, Peter said, new blood would never be given swords. But dire times call for dire measures. Swords and spears have always been our weapons of choice. The live wood of Avalon is too soft and fleshy for accurate arrows. We use short swords and light spears as they play best to our strengths of speed and cunning. And by cunning I mean we play the game our way. We use their height against them. We get in and out, low and fast. We do not engage them. We do not try to kill them. Our goal is to maim. We go for their weakest spots.
Peter pointed to his own limbs.
Their legs and arms, especially their ankles and knees. Ankles are thin and close to the ground, hard to protect. This,
Peter pointed to the long tendon on the back of his foot,
is your Achilles tendon. If you cut this tendon, they cannot walk. Once they can no longer walk, they're done.
Peter pointed to the straw dummies.
We've lots to show you. Find a straw man and let's get started.
Sakiyu paired with Nick, Peter with Danny, and Redbone with Cricket. Nick hefted his short sword, swung it about, getting the feel of it in his hand. The blade was heavy but well balanced.
Okay,
Sakiyu said, and pushed the straw man toward Nick. Nick prepared himself. Keeping in mind all the things Sakiyu had taught him about proper footwork, he sprang forward and back, timing his strikes. He found that many of the same principles of the staff and spear applied to sword play. He was able to stab the dummy several times without losing his footing. Sakiyu raised an eyebrow.
Good footwork, she said.
Compliments were hard won from Sakiyu, and Nick was surprised at how much her approval meant to him. He couldn't help but smile.
But you must focus on using the edge of the sword, not so much stabbing. A flesh eater can take many stabs and keep coming. If you must stab, be aware. Your blade can get caught in their hide. So it is best to make quick, strong strikes. You want to cut muscle, sever tendons.
Sakiyu spent most of the day with Nick. Nick found it impossible to think in terms of cutting flesh, of actually fighting, but instead lost himself in the craft of sword play, determined to master the discipline Sakiyu was teaching. He'd be fighting for more than his life tomorrow. He'd be fighting to get back to his mom. Nick went at the straw man with a zeal and vigor he'd not known before, determined to learn all he could. He also found himself amazed by how much his speed, dexterity, timing, even his endurance had improved. The hiking and training was some of it, but he knew the porridge was playing its part too.
Danny's right, he thought. If we could bottle that gunk and take it back, we'd make a fortune.
Peter called for a break for the kids to don pads and helmets. They were given wooden swords wrapped in cloth. As they waited for Danny to finish tying his pads, Nick watched the devils sparring. He was still amazed at their mastery, but found he could now see the technique beneath the speed, could recognize the forms and tricks for what they were.
could sometimes predict or read a move before it was even acted upon.
It's one thing to hit a moving target, Peter said. Quite another to hit a moving target that's trying to hit you. Leroy, Peter pointed to one side of the round sand pit. Over there.
Leroy hopped up and took his place.
Danny, here.
He pointed to the opposite side of the ring. Danny looked around as though there might be another Danny in the chamber.
Move it, Danny, Peter called and clapped. Quick, quick!
Danny pushed himself up with a huff and shuffled over to his place.
Leroy here is a flesh eater, and it's your flesh he's after, Peter said.
Leroy flared his eyes at Danny, grinned, showing all of his teeth, and nodded. Danny slumped his shoulders, looked up at the ceiling, and let out a long groan.
That's the spirit, Danny, Peter said, rolling his eyes. Look, this is fun. It's like tag. All you have to do to win is whop the lunkhead over there on a leg, arm, or head. Fun, huh?
Danny groaned again.
Leroy, remember, Peter said. You're a flesh eater. You're only to respond to his attack. Light contact. We're not trying to hurt each other. Got it?
Still wearing his sadistic grin, Leroy nodded agreeably.
Go!
Shouted Peter.
Get him, Danny boy! Cricket cried. Go get him!
Danny gave her a baleful look, let out a loud sputter through his lips, and began circling Leroy. Leroy put up his guard and waited. Danny circled and circled and would probably have continued all day if Peter had let him.
Danny, you trying to make him dizzy? Get him! Peter shouted. Attack!
Come on, wuss, Leroy said. Let's see what you got.
Danny lunged. Leroy easily sidestepped and smacked Danny hard on the shoulder with the side of his sword. Danny dropped his sword.
Ow!
He cried.
Damn it, Leroy! Peter said light contact. What part of light contact don't you understand?
Leroy shrugged.
Sorry, dude.
It's your life, Danny,
Peter shouted while clapping his hands.
Grab the sword! Move, move, move!
Danny picked up his sword and charged, clenching his eyes shut and swinging wildly in all directions. Leroy knocked Danny's sword down and hit Danny hard on the butt as he barreled past. Danny went sprawling into the sand. Nick caught the dispirited glance between Peter and Sikiyu. Redbone put his face in his hands and shook his head. Leroy was laughing so hard he could hardly stand. Danny's face was bright red. He punched the sand with his fist, picked up the sword, and got slowly back to his feet.
Danny, remember your training, Peter said. You can't charge a flesh eater. You have to find his weak spots. Use cunning.
Danny's eyes grew large, his mouth dropped open, and he pointed at something behind Leroy.
Whoa! What's that?
This time, Peter put his face in his hands. Leroy smirked.
You'll have to do better than that, fat ass.
Danny dropped his guard, looked defeated, and started to turn away. Then, with all the grace and cunning of an armadillo, he spun back around and made a low swing at Leroy's ankle. He missed completely, and Leroy delivered a solid whack to the side of Danny's helmet. Danny made a weak, bleeding sound, dropped his sword, and cradled his head in his hands. His face cinched up, and Nick could see he was trying not to cry.
Oh, don't be a baby, Leroy said.
I barely touched you.
Go to hell,
Danny yelled, and threw his sword at Leroy. The sword missed by a wide berth, and Leroy started laughing again. Peter gave Leroy a dirty look.
What?
Leroy said and shrugged.
I'm a flesh eater. You're an asshole, Cricket said.
Peter pulled Danny to his feet and threw an arm around him. What do you say we let someone else have a turn?
Danny tore off the helmet, threw it in the sand, then plopped down heavily next to Cricket.
Nick, Peter called. Ready to give it a shot?
No, getting into the ring with that psycho is about the last thing I want to do. Nick let out a long breath, strapped on his helmet, and got to his feet. Nick met Leroy's eyes. Leroy cocked his head back and smirked. But below that smirk, Nick saw something else, something dangerous.
He's out to get me, Nick thought. Okay, Nick, Peter said. Tag him. Leg, arm, or head. Got it?
Nick nodded.
Leroy, Peter said sternly. You keep the contact down. Got it?
Leroy only grinned. Nick slipped around the ring, keeping light on his toes. He made quick jabs and short jumps in and out, testing Leroy's defenses just as Sikiyu had shown him. Leroy followed his every move.
Get him, Nick! Cricket called.
Yeah, Leroy laughed. Get me, Twinkle Toes.
Nick lunged, making a low slash for Leroy's ankle. Leroy countered, blocking the blow with such force as to knock Nick off balance. Leroy followed around and caught him on the arm, a solid smack that sent Nick into the sand. Even though the swords were padded, Nick had to grit his teeth not to cry out.
Up, Nick! Peter called. Back on your feet! Quick!
Nick rolled to his feet. There was no doubt now. Leroy meant to hurt him, would hurt him. Nick felt old fears and self-doubts assail him.
No, Nick thought. I won't let him intimidate me. I'm the one that stood and faced the Bargest. If I can kill a Bargest, I can take this jerk. Just need to focus. Stay focused.
Nick met Leroy's eyes and held them. Leroy must have seen something in that look, because his smirk fell away.
Okay, Peter said. Keep it light and fun.
Go, Nicky! Cricket yelled. Get him!
Nick saw Leroy slide into a wider stance, planting his feet in the sand for leverage. He noted how tightly Leroy clutched the sword and knew Leroy planned to really clobber him this time.
Okay, Nick thought. He's stronger than me. I'll never win with force.
Sikiyu had shown him a simple maneuver, a feint and counterattack. She'd said it was very effective against an aggressive opponent, but it was one thing to execute the maneuver on a straw man, quite another on some shit trying his best to break your bones.
If it doesn't work, Nick thought, he's going to nail me.
He glanced at Sikiyu. She seemed to read his thoughts. She smiled and nodded. Nick used his eyes and body language to telecast a low attack. He made sure Leroy caught him eyeing his ankles. Then Nick went in quick and feinted a low swing. Leroy bought it completely. He swung down hard, anticipating Nick's attack, his full momentum behind the block. The instant he committed, Nick switched, surprised by his own speed. He had a second to catch the stunned look on Leroy's face, the utter disbelief, as the boy stumbled forward off balance. Then Nick struck. A tremendous crack echoed across the hall as his sword hit the back of Leroy's helmet, sending him face first into the sand. There followed a long space of silence as everybody just stared. Peter blinked a couple of times and finally managed a breathless,
"Wow."
"Woohoo!"
Danny cried.
"You killed him!"
"No," Nick thought. "No such luck."
Leroy sat up, face red and covered in sand. He spat and looked stunned, but not as stunned as Nick.
Nick was amazed, not so much by the fact that he'd managed to outplay Leroy, Leroy, after all, was just a big lunkhead, but that he'd once again pushed fear from his mind and focused on what had to be done.
Peter recovered his spirit.
Did you guys see that? That's exactly what we've been talking about. You have to rely on your speed and trickery. You have to make them fight your fight.
Redbone pulled Leroy to his feet. You all right? Leroy jerked away. Of course I'm all right, he said harshly. Little prick barely touched me. Lucky shot. No big deal.
Nick thought that it was a big deal, and judging from Leroy's face, it was a very big deal. Peter clapped his hands together.
That's enough for now. Time for grub.
The devils all headed for the table, leaving Leroy and the new blood behind. Leroy shucked off his arm pads, untied his helmet. He walked over to them and pointed at the sparring equipment.
Cleaned his shit up, he growled.
Then he pushed his face into Nick's, glaring into his eyes. Nick held the bigger boy's eyes, determined to stand his ground. A slight smirk nudged the corner of Leroy's mouth. He shoved his helmet into Nick's chest.
Put it away, Leroy said, and stomped off.
In the movies or on TV, that would have been the end of it. The bully gaining a little respect for him and, if not eventually becoming his friend, at least leaving him be. But Nick knew that's not how things worked in the real world. In the real world, you might get a lucky lick in, but boys like Leroy, they never forgot, never forgave. And then somewhere, somehow, boys like Leroy always got you back. The following morning, Nick sat as far away from Leroy as he could and watched the devils prepare for the raid. He'd had the dreams again, as bad as before, maybe worse. Each morning, the darkness in his heart was harder to shake off. He studied his arms, expecting to find some sign of the dark scales and claws. It was all too real in the dream. The screams, the blood, the carnage. Nick put his face in his hands and rubbed his eyes.
I don't want to turn into a monster.
Cricket came along with her breakfast and sat across from him.
How you doing there, Nicky?
Cricket asked, worried.
Never been chipper, Nick mumbled.
Danny wandered over, a bowl in one hand, rubbing sleep out of his eyes with the other.
What's the plan?
Don't know, Cricket said.
Nobody said.
Sure are up early, Danny grumbled. Still dark outside.
A low, tense murmuring filled the chamber as the devils went about strapping on weapons, applying war paint, and dressing for battle. Nick noted the rather eclectic assortment of arms and armaments. Alongside the more traditional medieval styles, there were a German Kaiser helmet, a tank helmet, an old-style leather football helmet, aviator goggles, at least two samurai swords, a Civil War cavalry saber, ninja stars, a pitchfork, and several pairs of brass knuckles. Most of the kids wore the one-piece rawhide leathers with the pointed boots sewn into them, but several also had on leather jackets from Nick's world, customized with spikes and studs, looking to Nick like a gang of psychotic punk rockers. Sikiyu came over. With her war paint on, she truly looked the part of an Indian on the warpath.
Come, she said.
Nervous, the new blood followed her to where the devils were getting dressed. Peter had two short swords strapped on his back, the pelts crisscrossing his chest bandito style. A black splash of war paint covered his face, and his golden eyes gleamed out from the paint. He pulled his swords free, clanged them together, and all the devils lined up on either side of him. Including Peter, there were 23 warriors. Peter took a step forward, crossed his swords upon his chest, and set his gleaming golden eyes on Nick, Danny, and Cricket.
Today the devils go into battle. We go to stop the burning of Whisperwood. There'll be bloodshed. Oh yes, plenty of death to go around this great day.
He smiled wickedly.
But a soul simply has not lived until they've heard the screams of their dying enemies.
Peter cocked his head and looked deep into their faces.
Who among you will make the flesh eaters scream?
The new blood shared a quick look.
Any who stand with us today will become devils the moment they walk out that door. For such a courageous deed would make any worthy. We've a world to win. Eternal youth and all the glory of fairy awaits our victory. Search your hearts. Find the courage to take life on. Now, who will share this grand adventure with us? Who will become a Lord of Avalon?
This was it, Nick knew. The point of no return. It was all too real now, and suddenly, he was unsure. Was this a death march? Did he dare trust this insane boy? The last time he'd followed Peter, he'd ended up in the mist, fighting for his life. Did he believe today would be any better? Nick glanced from Danny to Cricket. They looked as scared as he felt. This wasn't a game. Not this time. They were going off to kill men. You can call them flesh eaters or whatever you like, but they were men. By the gravity in the air, Nick suspected some of these kids, maybe a lot of these kids, wouldn't be coming back. Nick wondered if he might stand a better chance trying to get back home on his own. None of the new blood stepped forward. They stared at the ground, fidgeting and shifting from foot to foot. Leroy stood beside Peter, his head cocked back. Like a real tough guy, Nick thought. Leroy was decked out in full devil garb, proudly holding his sword and looking full of himself. Cricket gave Nick a nervous, sidelong glance. Nick met her eyes and shook his head. You don't have to do this, he whispered. She made a pained face that said she did.
This is my family now, she said, and walked over.
Peter hugged her, and all the devils clapped her on the back. Then it was Nick and Danny. Danny was biting his lip, his brow cinched up. Danny glanced at Nick.
Peter says we won't have to do any fighting.
Do you believe that? Danny shrugged his shoulders. Took in a deep breath, like someone about to jump off the high diving board for the first time, then followed Cricket. They were all looking at Nick then. The silence of the room weighed on his shoulders. He caught the smirk on Leroy's face. That smirk said Nick was a chump, a wuss, a regular fucktard. But Nick didn't care about that, not anymore. It was his mother that mattered. He thought of her alone in that house, and in the end, he knew he had but one choice. Nick locked eyes with Leroy and stepped forward. When he did, Leroy's smirk fell from his face. As a matter of fact, Leroy looked like he'd just swallowed a bug. A cheer rang out. Peter dashed forward and embraced Nick in a bear hug. Then they were all patting him on the back, ruffling his hair. At some point among the cheering, the backslaps and grins, Nick forgot to be scared, forgot to be mad, realized he was grinning too. I've lost my mind, he thought. I've totally lost my mind. And it was amazing how good it felt.
Three cheers for our new blood, Peter cried.
One and all, they cheered. The devil's aloofness evaporated. Nick felt the warmth of a true brotherhood as the whole clan worked quickly to deck the new blood out in battle gear. Even the most ferocious of the devils pitched in, laughing and joking as they helped them lace up boots and strap on belts and armor. They'd painted lines of dark green straight down Cricket's face, and when she pursed her lips and lowered her head, she looked wicked and dangerous. Unfortunately for Danny, he'd allowed Redbone to apply his war paint.
He's a war cat, Redbone declared.
But complete with black snout and whiskers, Danny looked more like a war panda. No one could look at him without letting out a snort. It only made matters worse when Danny began to pout, for then he looked like a pouting panda. After seeing what they'd done to Danny, Nick decided it might be prudent to slip over to the mirror. At first, Nick thought it was some trick, because the boy in the mirror wasn't him. Standing there instead was a savage with dark swatches of black paint running down both sides of his face. The savage looked lean and hard, but it was the eyes that Nick found most disturbing. Piercing, haunted eyes, sparkling with gold. Was that really him? What had they done with the nerdy boy with the funny shoes? Nick wasn't sure how he felt about this. Peter came up behind him.
Nick, this is for you.
Peter handed him a short sword. Nick slipped it out of the tattered leather scabbard. The blade was thin and elegant, so smooth as to shimmer, but on closer inspection, Nick could see the faintest runes inlaid up and down the metal. When the graceful designs caught the light, they sparkled like tiny diamonds. Its edge was so sharp that he nicked his thumb just by touching it.
Wow, Nick said. Peter beamed. It's a true elven blade, one from their glory days of long, long ago. It's so strong and sharp that it can cut through steel. These are very rare, Nick. Oh, and it has a name, of course, because those silly elves have to give everything a name. It's called Maldurial. I want you to have it.
Nick looked at Peter. He didn't know what to say. Why had Peter given this to him? He hadn't given any of the other new bloods such gifts.
Maldurial? No, Maldurial, Peter corrected.
Maldurial, Nick repeated.
Maldurial?
Redbone echoed, then laughed. That's a girl's sword. Peter frowned and gave him a cutting look.
A girl's sword? Nick asked.
No,
Tang Nost put in.
Not a girl's sword, but the sword itself is female.
My sword has a gender? Man, you gotta dig them elves, Redbone said. They're a fruity bunch.
Nick looked at the sword again, at all the slender, graceful lines. It did look rather feminine.
Well, girl sword or not, I like it, he said.
Thanks. Peter's smile returned, big and broad.
Sure thing, he replied,
then slipped over to help Danny get his belt in place. Nick held the blade up and snuck another peek into the mirror. He decided that he did indeed like what he saw, liked it very much. And for the moment, he let himself relax, to set aside the dark thoughts and fears, and just reveled in how cool he looked decked out in the odd leather devil suit, with its sewn-in boots and high belted waistband, his hair in a greasy tangle, war paint running down his face, and a flipping elven sword named Maldurial.
Too cool. Let's go, Peter called, and the devils began to file out the door.
Nick snuck a last peek, still not believing what he was seeing. He touched his blue rabbit's foot to his lips, then ran along after them. Part 3. The Flesh Eaters. Chapter 16. Flame. They trekked silently down the trail, all lost in their own thoughts, the ageless silence of warriors making peace with their fears as they marched into battle. Nick glanced over at Redbone. Redbone winked at him, his perpetual grin growing into an impish smile. Nick looked behind him at the handful of devils pulling up the rear, every face greeting him with kinship and camaraderie. Nick had never experienced anything like it, and as much as he hated to admit it, he was beginning to enjoy being a devil. He even wondered if this was why so many people loved team sports, this sense of coming together under one banner against a common foe. The forest changed as they continued their downward track through the gray and dying trees. The land turned ashen and soggy underfoot. The fog thickened, clinging to the ground. The trees seemed to shrink, to wither, bending beneath their own weight, their jagged limbs clawing the sky like drowning men. After about an hour's march, a tangy burning smell assailed Nick's nostrils.
Smoke. Fires, he thought. The flesh eaters can't be too far away.
And suddenly it was all too real. It's one thing to hit a straw dummy and pretend you're fighting monsters. Quite another to know that monsters, ones even Redbone and Sikiyu were wary of, were not only real, but nearby. Peter gestured the devils to him, and they gathered around. He put a finger to his lips and whispered,
"We must be silent. Follow my hand signals. Stay close."
Nick's heart sped up and he had to force himself to slow his breathing.
How close? He wondered.
His eyes darted everywhere, trying to peer through the ground fog. Every rotten bush and stump suddenly looked like a monster. Nick wrapped his hand tightly around Melduriel's hilt, wondering yet again what it would be like to actually face a man with a sword, hoping to God he wouldn't have to find out. Peter raised a hand, and they halted. He slipped up ahead, surveying the terrain before waving the devils to follow. Silently, they pushed through a mesh of undergrowth until they could see down a steep slope into a valley. Peter signaled to stay low. Between the rolling waves of low-lying clouds, Nick scanned the burned and ravaged land. His blood went cold. There below them,
flesh eaters.
From where he lay, they were little more than ant-sized dots milling about near the burning trees. Nick's mouth suddenly felt dry as he watched them moving in and out of the black smoke. He glanced at Peter. Peter's face was grim as he took in every moment.
Strange to see such severity on Peter's face, Nick thought.
No boyish mischief here. What Nick saw looked wild and scary, deadly. Peter took in a deep breath.
So many.
He hadn't counted on so many, at least 60 or 70 flesh eaters that he could see. There'd be more. And somewhere among them, the captain. A direct assault would be a gallant way to die, but Peter wasn't looking for a way to die. He wanted to drive them out of Whisperwood and save Avalon. He fought to keep his despair hidden. If he lost confidence in front of the devils, all would be lost. He now understood why Tangnost had tried so hard to bring the clans together in one coordinated attack. And as much as he hated to even think it, if Ulfgar would bear Caliburn, they could drive the captain and his flesh eaters into the mist this very day. Peter realized he was grinding his teeth and took in a deep breath, letting it out slowly. Now wasn't the time for maybes and what ifs. He must stay focused. One way or another, they had to stop these demons.
There, the barrels.
He watched the figures march back and forth between a pair of barrels in the trees. He slipped up closer, squinted.
So, it must be oil after all.
He nodded to himself. Then maybe there is another way. Peter signaled them back. They gathered in a small ravine. Peter squatted on his haunches, and they followed his example.
We're after the oil,
Peter said in a hushed tone.
Whisperwood isn't a typical forest, even by Avalon standards. Most of the trees are living beings, each with its own spirit. They see and hear and even whisper to one another. And long ago, before the flesh eaters came, they used to sing to each other, and there was no song more beautiful. Beneath their thick bark is flesh and blood. Those trees won't burn by torch alone. The flesh-eaters are brushing oil on them to set them ablaze, burning them alive. They can't have much oil left, not after all these years. They must be desperate to be using the last of their reserves. If we knock over those barrels and dump their oil, it'll put an end to the burning of Whisperwood. We don't have enough devils to push through that many flesh-eaters, so this is what we're going to do. We're going to draw them away from the oil with an attack by a main force and send in a small squad to knock over the barrels. The captain knows our tricks. He'll not easily be fooled. We have to make this a real assault or he won't give chase. He knows we've the advantage in the forest and will be reluctant to follow us into the woods. So we'll have to take the fight to the edge of the fields. Try to draw the flesh-eaters in. Hit and run. Hit and run. Avoid a full engagement at all cost. We won't be able to do much damage, and neither will they. And that's what I want. Remember, all that matters is that we distract them long enough for the squad to dart in, get past whatever guard is left, and knock over those barrels. Sikiyu, you're in charge of the squad. Redbone, Abraham, Leroy, and Nick, go with Sikiyu.
Peter caught the anxious looks on Leroy's and Nick's faces. He looked them square in the eye and smiled confidently.
They have to know you believe in them or they won't believe in themselves.
But a darker voice knew this would be dangerous, that he was sending two of them after the barrels in the hopes that at least one would make it. He held little hope either would return.
You're not to engage unless you have to. Your role is to focus on the barrels. Sikiyu, Abraham, and Redbone will take care of any guards. Nick, Leroy, I'm giving you two the most important task of this whole operation. I wouldn't pick you unless I knew you could do this. Are you with me?
Nick and Leroy still looked unsure, but they both nodded.
Good. Sikiyu, take your group and circle around to the east side of the clearing. Wait under cover until you hear us attack. We'll come in from the west side. You know the drill. Get in and out as fast as you can. Danny, Cricket, you're coming with me.
Cricket also looked nervous, but Danny looked absolutely petrified. Peter caught his hands trembling and thought the boy might start crying at any moment.
He's not ready.
Peter wondered if he should leave the boy behind.
No, now is not the time to play it safe. Danny, Cricket, you're going to do fine. Your role is simply to make our numbers look more impressive. Hang back, make a lot of noise, and stay well clear of the combat. Think you can do that?
They both agreed, but Danny still looked petrified.
Remember, our goal is to draw them away from the barrels. As soon as the barrels are knocked over, we all run into the forest. If anyone from either party gets separated, we meet back here. You can see this outcropping of red boulders from just about anywhere in the valley.
Peter stood up and let a wicked smile slide across his face.
Time to play.
The devils grinned back. Time to play. Peter watched Sikiyu and her crew slip away through the brambles and disappear into the ground fog, then led his own group down the west slope toward the burning fields. The going was slow and treacherous as they wove their way silently around the wet rocks, mud, clingy briars, and roots. Near the bottom of the valley, just as the land began to level out, Peter caught the distant shouts of flesh-eaters at their labors. While trying to decide the best path forward, he heard it. A click. Somewhere to their flank. Peter signaled, and the devils dropped to a crouch. Another pop, coming from somewhere toward their front. He heard it again. Then again. He scanned the drifting grayness in front of him, searching for movement, but saw nothing.
He was sure someone was heading their way, a scout or a sentry, maybe even a small troop.
No, thought Peter. Not now.
If they were discovered before Sikiyu could get into position, all would be lost. Their only chance would be to try to make short work of any enemies before they blew their cover. Peter reached for one of his swords, then stopped, suddenly feeling cold steel against the back of his neck.
What have we here?
Came a sharp whisper. Peter slowly turned, expecting to look into the eyes of his executioner. Standing behind him at spear's length was the old elf, Drail. Drail lifted his spear and smiled.
You weren't going to go play without me, were you?
Peter's face lit up with disbelief and pleasure.
Drail, you came! By the gods, you came!
Peter couldn't grin any wider. He leaped to his feet and embraced the old elf.
It's good to see you again.
Drail clucked his tongue and five more elves materialized out of the smoky woods, each armed with three throwing spears. They'd traded their traditional green tunics for gray and had their long hair tied back out of their slanted, icy eyes.
I heard word you entered the Lady's Wood seeking allies. I bring five of the guard's finest.
He extended his hand toward the elves.
I just wish I could have convinced more to join with us. The elves find it hard to break an oath, even in the face of madness. I'm afraid the rest of the guard will follow Ulfgar to their doom. My allegiance lies with the lady, not a crazed lord. I'd rather die here today, among warriors, than cower within the Lady's Wood.
What do you say? Do we fight this day?
Peter clasped the old elf's shoulder.
You are a true friend.
And you, my friend, are a crazy devil.
Then we go?
Yes, Peter. We follow your lead.
Peter moved out, and the devils and elves fell in line. Peter had to blink back tears, not just from seeing the face of an old friend, but because they'd come to fight with him, to follow him against such hopeless odds. This in itself was a victory. They weren't enough, he knew, but he felt better knowing he had six elven swords at his side. He bit his lip.
We must win this day.
The cry cut through the fog, a sound of pain, agony, and helplessness, a sound so human that Nick found it impossible to believe it could be a tree. Tree or not, Nick wanted to run as far from the cry as he could get. But he didn't run. Instead, he gritted his teeth and forced himself onward against every instinct, following Sikiyu as they slithered on their bellies through the mud and brambles toward the clearing. Nick stopped to wipe a clot of mud from his mouth. He glanced back, and though Redbone was only a few paces behind, Nick could barely make him out. Sikiyu had them cover themselves from head to toe in a greasy muck of mud, leaves, and bark. Now they blended into the land, all but invisible among the ash and smoke. They'd circumvented the clearing and were now creeping forward from the east side. As they neared, Nick could hear rough shouts and make out movement through the brambles. Sikiyu signaled them up, and Nick slid forward with slow, steady movements, as she had instructed, avoiding any quick moves that might draw attention. Abraham and Leroy crawled into position on one side of Sikiyu, and Nick on the other. A moment later, Redbone, his absurd grin in place, slipped in next to Nick. Black clouds rolled across the clearing, obscuring their view. Nick strained to see while fighting not to cough on the thick smoke. It smelled of burned wood, but there was another smell, a sweet, sickly smell, like cooking meat. The rough voices of men barking orders came through the murk. Suddenly, a bright flame lit up the smoke, followed by a long, horrible scream. Nick put his hands over his ears.
How can a tree make such a cry?
The wind shifted, blowing the smoke away from the forest, and there, not 50 yards away, stood a dozen flesh-eaters. Nick's heart drummed in his chest. They were men, not monsters, and somehow seeing their humanity made them all the more ghastly. Some horrible disease had infested their very core. Their skin was scaly, shriveled, and black like that of a burn victim, and their faces were distorted as though in great pain. Their bodies were emaciated, their ribs and hips jutted out in sharp contrast to their shriveled waists. Yet Nick could see lean, ropey muscles and veins rippling across their chests, shoulders, and arms. Their eyes were blood red, sunken deep in their cadaverous sockets, and with only a tiny black speck of a pupil, their noses little more than slits, their lips peeled back, revealing white gums and yellow teeth. A chill ran down Nick's spine. These men, their skin, their eyes, they were the same as the creature he'd become in his nightmares. Was he turning into one of these? Is that what the magic was doing to him? No, I'll risk the mist before I become one of these horrors. Sikiyu poked Nick and pointed to a large cauldron set upon a slight rise about 100 yards out. A fire smoldered beneath. Nearby were two barrels with stringy black oil dripping down their sides. Nick wondered how they could possibly cover that much ground before the flesh-eaters caught them. There were at least 10 guards stationed around the cauldron itself, heavily armed men carrying swords and spears, wearing breastplates or studded doublets and metal helmets with high combs like a rooster's crown. Dozens more were spread out, grim-faced men who looked alert and dangerous, patrolling the tree line in intervals in both directions. 2 barefoot men, dressed in ragged knee-length breeches and filthy tattered shirts, tromped up the rise to the cauldron, carrying a bucket in each hand. A hunchbacked man with a peg leg stirred the oil. When the men stepped up, he scooped out the oil with a large ladle and dumped the slick goo into the buckets. The men watched balefully until the buckets were full, then hoisted their burden and slogged back toward the tree line. Men with straw brooms awaited them. They dipped the brooms into the oil and swabbed it onto the tree trunks. As they stepped away, another man stepped forward, bearing a torch. Nick knew what was coming and didn't want to see it, but he couldn't turn away. The torchbearer set the flame to the tree. The oil took a moment to light, a small bluish flame that spread slowly along the oil. But once the flame took, it blazed up, greedily engulfing the tree. The tree began to scream and scream as its trunk and limbs crackled beneath the blaze. Before the first one had finished, they were already on to the next, and the next. And now there was a chorus of screaming trees. The black smoke rolled across the clearing along with the sickly sweet smell of cooked flesh. A low moan arose around Nick. He glanced about uneasily before he realized that those were the other trees, wailing at the sound of their dying kin.
Oh, good God, this is too much.
He felt Sikiyu's hand on his arm, a gesture meant to reassure him, but Nick could see the muscles working in her jaw. Nick found himself wanting to just get this nightmare over with. Where was Peter? How much longer would they have to wait? Nick tried to distract himself by visually tracing and marking the best path to reach the barrels. The burned hulks, roots, and limbs of the fallen trees lay tangled together, forming a treacherous obstacle course. He'd have to navigate this path while men tried to kill him. The mud would be slippery. One misstep could easily mean his death. Nick swallowed. His throat felt dry. Am I really about to do this? Peter better know what... Nick's thoughts were cut off. One of the guards was staring directly at him. The guard slumped against a stump, chewing on a twig. He had a knot of long black hair atop his otherwise bald head. He held a dented helmet in one hand and wore a tarnished breastplate over a cracked leather doublet and ragged breeches. A sword and knife hung from a buckler about his waist, and a short halberd sat across his lap. He seemed to be peering directly at Nick with his piercing red eyes. Nick's blood went cold. He blinked, but dared not do anything else, afraid the slightest move would give them all away. The man leaned forward, squinting through the smoke. He leaned left, then right, as though trying to get a clearer view. He sat his helmet on his head, hefted his halberd, and started down the slope toward Nick. Nick tried not to breathe.
"Steady," Sakiyu whispered.
The flesh eater halted about a dozen yards away. He whistled to a nearby guard and waved the man over. When the second guard arrived, the first guard pointed toward Nick's hiding place. The new guard, a brutish squat man, looked up and down the bushes, then shook his head. But the first guard was persistent. He pulled the man forward and pointed again. The second guard just shrugged. Finally, the first guard spat out the twig he'd been chewing on and came tromping through the thicket right toward them. The second guard rolled his eyes, but followed along.
"We have to get away," Nick thought. "Now, while we still can."
A fresh plume of smoke enveloped them, clouding the view. Sakiyu, Abraham, and Redbone slipped their swords out in a quick, smooth motion. Their eyes were locked on the hazy shapes of the guard.